Hey there, Jeff Lerner here. Welcome to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. This is actually just going to be me and doing something a little different. So let me give you some context and then we're just going to jump right to it. I just came off a call where a question came up, and it's a question that I get a lot, especially when I go speak at, you know, business events or when I'm working with, you know, groups of entrepreneurs. This question comes up a lot. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to shoot a YouTube video about this, also record a podcast episode about this, because this is a huge question that impacts a lot of entrepreneurs. And the question, and I'll just get to the point, the question is, should you prioritize, you know, really philosophically in your organization, hiring talent, in other words, bringing people in from outside the organization as you grow, or developing talent internally as you grow as an organization? And obviously, there's no black or white answer. It's always going to be nuanced and case by case, depending on the role, depending on the talent pool, depending on who you have internally, who's available externally, all that stuff. But philosophically, you want to have, I think, you know, every organization needs to have a certain number of clearly defined biases, because your biases ultimately become the basis of your culture. And so that's really the question. Should you be biased toward bringing in outside people or developing internal people? Let me get to the point. So as a little bit of a setup here, I have an organization called Entre Institute, and we, in addition to teaching people how to become entrepreneurs and build businesses and actually install a whole life operating system, to ultimately the point is, you know, have the life that you want and actually be able to pay for it and logistically achieve it, right? But we also are, let's say, we eat our own cooking. We are trying to be the best students of our own teaching, because we have scaled a pretty large organization very quickly. And so we're trying to be like the best entrepreneurs we can be as we lead a mission to help other people in the world thrive and grow as entrepreneurs too. And so a lot of the stuff that we teach is actually developed through our own internal workings. And in this case, this subject is a big thing that I would say 5 years ago, before we built or launched Entre, I didn't really have a strong position on this, but now I very much do, from having scaled a reasonably good-sized organization pretty quickly, and I definitely have some thoughts on this. So let me use Entre as kind of a setup for why my thoughts are what they are. We have had a very good success rate at bringing in people from other organizations or from outside our organization that have really helped us level up as an organization. So for example, we've hired people that previously, you know, worked at Coca-Cola, for example. We've had people actually that worked at Amazon, LinkedIn, BuzzFeed, Apple, like people leaving these, you know, mega Fortune 500, Fortune 100 even organizations and coming here. And so that's probably a tee up for my answer to the question, which is, I think you should actually prioritize bringing talent in from outside your organization, but you have to build very intentionally a specific type of organization that's going to make that possible. Because essentially your value proposition to the market is going to be, hey, you know, come, you know, take what could be perceived as a step down or a step from a larger organization to a smaller organization. You have to have enough incentives and upsides for people to be wanting to do that at various stages in their career. And if you can create an organization where that's possible, and there's a lot of reasons you should, because it forces you to build a better organization in a lot of different ways, not just in terms of recruiting, but that absolutely should be your goal, and that should be your bias. I'm going to explain to you why. First, let me touch on a couple of the main variables that are going to determine whether or not that's actually doable for you as an organization. First of all, is going to be your company culture. That's such a cheap buzzword that gets thrown around, but when you're trying to bring in great people, it's like everything, because usually one of the biggest reasons they would want to come from a larger organization to a smaller organization is because they want to have more direct, they want a stronger culture, or they want to feel like they can make more of a direct impact on the business. Also, company financial health. People that are by definition more talented or more experienced or more seasoned than the, you know, average within your organization are probably also going to, at some level, be more expensive than typically the norm within your organization. And, you know, as you evolve, you can do salary benchmarking and create leveling guidelines and all this stuff that, you know, can kind of be in the weeds, the HR weeds. But in general, company financial health is going to determine a lot whether or not you can get the best people because they, you know, cost money, right? Also, the company mission really, you know, again, company buzz or cheap buzzwords that get thrown around, like we're a mission-driven company or whatever, but like, what is the mission of your company? And is it a mission that somebody coming from an outside organization is going to feel like literally the meaning of their life, the value of the work that they do is a step up, even if they, quote, step down into a smaller organization, because now the work matters more because of the significance of the mission. Like, what is, how have you actually framed your product or service or your unique selling proposition to the market in a way that it actually is doing meaningful, impactful work that people are going to be excited to be aligned with? Also, for you as a founder or a CEO or a leader of an organization, your track record, and I'll talk a little bit more about how you can sort of compensate if you don't have a track record. You know, who you are and what you've done in the past is something that people are going to look at. And then what's the end game or the exit plan? Like, what are you building towards? And how well, how clearly can you communicate that to somebody to say, hey, come hitch your wagon to this train because this is where we're going, not just in terms of our infinite game and the, you know, impact we're trying to have in the world, but also in a foreseeable timeline, this is what we think can actually happen, right? And how it can play out. So those are some of the variables that are going to determine the trueness of my opinion, which is that you should prioritize bringing in external talent over developing internal talent. Again, just as a bias, not as an absolute, not as a black or white, not as an every time or one size fits all approach. But those are variables that are going to impact your ability to sort of favor that bias and to be successful with it. Now, the reasons why you want to bring in outside talent, I mean, they're probably pretty obvious. But, you know, if you think about, like, for example, I mean, we brought somebody in who used to work at Apple. Apple is a notoriously intense and competitive culture. So, like, these people have proven a certain amount of toughness simply because they survived and succeeded at other companies like that. They've also... again, I'll just stick with the Apple example, although it's true at all these other organizations that we brought people in from. They invest millions or oftentimes billions of dollars in training their people. They're making these really large, long-term investments in developing great people. And you basically get the benefit of that. You get to receive, you know, the benefit of, let's say, use the term Apple or use the example of an Apple person. Like, I don't know, let's say... even just on like a unit basis, that person received $250,000 in training from Apple in, you know, 3 or 4 years, whatever, however long they worked there, I don't actually know. But let's just say hypothetically, well, that replaces, and frankly, Apple has economies of scale. That would probably cost us $500,000 to do that same amount of training and professional development with that person. And we just get the benefit of all that, right? As they come from outside. And with that, they're going to bring institutional knowledge of how these larger organizations, these elite organizations, how they run, how they're able to execute. And I'll give you an example. So, for example, one of the guys that has come into our organization in the last year did time at multiple larger organizations, one of which was LinkedIn. And I guess in their first full quarter, when we were doing quarterly planning, or we call it quarterly sprint planning, they were like, well, this is how LinkedIn does it. Would you guys like to see and learn? And we're like, oh my gosh, of course. That's like invaluable knowledge that I can say within a week, we were a better, smarter, stronger, faster, more precise organization because of institutional knowledge that they brought with them that wasn't necessarily training and development dollars that company invested in them. It was just simple osmosis from being in proximity to how that company did stuff. And now it shapes how we do our stuff, right? And there's almost no amount of money. I mean, you could go hire really expensive consultants, and, you know, like McKinsey or BCG or whatever, and they might come in and tell you these systems, but, or you could just hire the person you need anyways, and they bring another company's institutional knowledge with them. And then finally, the reason that I think maybe the most important reason why you should bring in outside talent is because it actually impacts your culture. It changes you to be more performance driven. It pushes you in the direction of meritocracy. It reduces entitlement where you don't have people saying, well, I've been here, so I deserve that role. Well, it's like, if you're all on board with the mission and you're all trying to build and grow in the same direction, then everybody should be aligned around, wanting the best person in that role, not just wanting themselves in that role. And that doesn't mean that they may not be the best person, but it helps foster an environment of fair, merit-based competition and makes people want to grow and develop to be as good or, God willing, even better than the people that are coming in from outside organizations, right? And I have seen this at Entra, where somebody comes into a role as an outside hire and they bring institutional knowledge and they bring training and they bring soft skills and they bring toughness that was developed over years at another organization. And suddenly everybody in proximity to them goes, oh, there's a new standard. That's what success looks like. Now I'm going to push myself to get better so the next time I get the call, right? And that's the kind of culture that you want in the modern world. So now let me share with you some keys, some of the key things to being able to actually hire that type of talent, talent that is what I call better faster. And it's not to say, oh, well, somebody from the outside is going to be better than somebody from the inside. It's going to be somebody from the outside is already better than somebody from the inside is currently. And maybe in two more years, the person internally could be as good as or even better than the person externally. But bring in the external person and they're better faster. They're like better now, right? It increases the speed at which you can consistently level up as an organization because you're constantly bringing in new influences that, you know, and it's there's a yin and a yang to it. Obviously, they have to assimilate. They have to be indoctrinated. They have to be incorporated into your culture. And there's, you know, that's subject for a different video. It's sort of like how you recruit accordingly and try to create alignment and people that are going to be a good fit. But, you know, for now, I'm just saying that, like, your organization as a whole, which is the sum of its individual parts to a large degree, is going to level up the more outside people are coming in and challenging internal people to get better faster because they were already better faster, so to speak. So how do you actually do it? How do you pull this off? First of all, as a CEO or a founder or a leader of an organization, you know, and you may be the one doing those interviews, or you may have a recruiter, or you may have an HR leader. I will say, if you have a recruiter and HR leader, one thing we've learned is that who you have having those initial conversations as they're out there scouting in the market makes a huge difference. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. So that's one of the roles you want to invest significantly in, is really, really having a lot of confidence in the person that's out there introducing your opportunity to prospective talent. But then for you as the leader of the organization, you have to really, really care about learning how to be a great business builder and be a great business leader. A lot of creators of businesses are subject matter experts in their particular product or service, and they've invested a lot in developing the skills that power their product or service. But to value the skills of building a business itself as of equal value to whatever skills feed into the product or service excellence, people, again, outside talent that's looking for a new place to call home, they are going to really, really appreciate that you as the leader of the organization are really committed to developing your skills in the area of business building, and thus will really value whatever they bring to the table that can help you do that. And there's a certain language that you learn to speak and a certain way of talking about business that is totally separate from the way you talk about your product or service. So you got to truly become a student of the game of building businesses. And then, you know, I've talked about culture. You've just got to insist upon, and this is, insist upon a performance culture. And this can be a really difficult thing in young companies, because a lot of young companies are, maybe they're started with friends or family, or they're started with, or there's just a lot of camaraderie that builds because it's an early small team that's kind of like the little engine that could. It's us versus the world, right? And so what can the dark side of that can start to be some entitlement. Hey, we're friends, so I should get the nod over X person. So you've got to be really, really adamant and insistent about creating a performance culture early on, because that's the only way that people from larger organizations, which are, you know, if they're successful, they're very likely performance cultures. That's the only way they're going to be drawn in and excited about what you have to offer. And part of a performance culture, you know, performance at what, right? I love the saying or the quote that, you know, a fish will be forever found wanting if it is judged on its ability to climb a tree, right? So it's like performance at what? If something's not suited for the way performance is measured, then it's going to receive a low evaluation of performance. So at a, you know, in a business, in a worthwhile business, a business that actually warrants existence, it's going to be the mission. The mission and whatever the mission calls for within the role, whatever allows the company to advance the mission, that's going to be the basis for performance within a given role. And so actually being a mission-led company, otherwise performance purely comes down to who makes us the most money. And then that will create a toxic mercenary culture that is not the kind of performance culture that you're looking for. And then going with the statement that you need to really be, as the leader of an organization, really truly be a student of the game of building businesses, really being able to speak about and articulate and understand your company operating system. Every company has an operating system, even if they haven't defined it, then they just have one, but that's the default of how people do the work. But actually having a company operating system, and there's a lot of great ones for smaller businesses, EOS, which is the entrepreneurial operating system. EMIS is one that comes from Michael Gerber's books. 40X is a popular one. Six Disciplines is a popular one. At Entre, we've actually adapted a couple different ones. We went through EOS. We went through 40X. We went through a really cool one called ETW, Execute to Win, which is based on these most important numbers concept. Anyway, we sort of fused the best of a few of them together that we truly tried. We tried implementing them, learned what worked, learned what didn't. We've been doing this for about 5 years, and we ultimately created our own that we just call the Entre OS. We're obviously Entre, and we're in the process of productizing. This is not a sales pitch for it, but I'm just saying, like, we have been really, really intentional and are pretty learned at this point when it comes to our company operating system. So I can get on a call with somebody that comes from, you know, a 10,000 or 50,000 person organization and have sort of an intellectual parity when they talk about how they're used to doing business and we talk about how we do business. It doesn't sound like we're just making it up as we go, because we actually have a company operating system. We have SOP, standard operating procedures, SOPs that are defined and we can point to and we can say, this is how the work gets done. And but within that, if you're a smaller or younger company, not being too rigid about it, where as people come in, they feel like they actually have the ability to impact how the work gets done, and that part of their appeal to you is the value that you place on what they know about how work gets done at larger, call it better or further along organizations, and that you're going to allow them to come in and impact your company operating system. But you have to have one, and you have to be able to talk about it in concrete terms for anybody to feel like they can come in and impact it, and it's not just going to be chaos. I'm gonna say one of my favorite quotes. This was, I want to say, Winston Churchill, who said, you know, for the first 25 years of my life, all I wanted was freedom. For the next 25 years of my life, all I wanted was order. And I think we can all relate to that. Well, those of us that are older than 25. And then he said, for the next 25 years, the final third chapter of his life, I realized that order is freedom. And that's why you have to have a company operating system. People within that are free to do their best work, and people will be drawn to that environment the more you can define. You know, Jocko Willink says, discipline is freedom. In business terms, I would agree, order is freedom. And so the way you create order is by having a clearly defined operating system that's a huge part of what's going to draw people in. The next thing I'll say is, you know, why would somebody leave a larger, more established, more secure organization to come, call it, take a bet on a smaller one? It's going to be, you know, human beings, we're naturally self-interested, right? What's in it for me? It's going to be because there's more opportunity to create upside or create, you know, value that can be multiplied exponentially in a smaller organization. You know, if you get hired at, let's say, Amazon, one of our team members came from Amazon, you go get hired at Amazon, what are the odds that your personal contribution could double the value of Amazon in the next 5 years? Or that Amazon probably will double in the next 5 years. It's a pretty unique organization, but it's not going to be because of you. It's going to be because of, you know, 700,000 people or however many people they have. And especially, what sort of long-term incentive are you going to have? How are you yoked into that upside or that growth, right? And when you're a smaller organization, a huge part of your pitch is, hey, come here, create a lot of value, help us grow. And you can participate in the upside of that value, especially if you have some sort of a clear end game. And it doesn't mean your only end game option is to sell your company, but have you considered various types of liquidity events, or have you considered you know, stock options that come with profit sharing or other types of distributions. Like, how do you offer somebody the opportunity to step into a larger role in a smaller organization where they can create more clearly defined value and participate in the upside as the company grows? Now, the next key is, and this is why I'm saying it's never too soon to consider this question and adopt this philosophy and start building ultimately with the goal in mind of creating a culture with this performance bias toward bringing in, call it, you know, like I said, faster, better people. This is why it's never too soon, because you have to create the understanding before you go out to the market and bring in great talent. You have to create the understanding with your existing team, however big or small, that company growth, and lesson learned here, there's frankly some people at Entra that are not here anymore, and it's because we didn't do this as effectively as we should have. And that is to say, company growth does not equal promotions for legacy people. That there will always, you have to create a culture and an understanding that there will always be true fair market competition for open roles, meaning both internal parties that want to apply and external parties that want to apply are going to have to compete on their merits, not based on their legacy, not based on their historical contributions, not based on their entitlement because of what they've done prior. Now, if what they've done prior has resulted in a lot of really valuable institutional knowledge and a lot of, cachet or leadership within the organization, they have a lot of respect, a lot of buy-in, people really respect them as a leader, and they say, oh, that person's been here. Now, that's a quantitative factor that you would certainly evaluate objectively in a healthy competition for a role. But it's not entitlement, right? It's still always based on definable merit. But you have to be installing that understanding very early in an organization, because otherwise people will naturally assume that as the organization grows, it's going to pull them up and you're going to be backfilling underneath, when in reality, probably the best thing you can do as an organization grows is continue to look forward and say, okay, well, we've grown this much, but we want to continue to grow to this point. So let's go find people that have done this type of role in that type of organization, the organization that we're wanting to become, because we're going to be more like that type of organization. If we're bringing in people that have done this role in that type of organization, it's going to pull us in that direction, right? So, then you have people that are like, well, why didn't I get promoted? And so they have to have that understanding beforehand. Otherwise, they're going to be pissed off that they can sabotage you. Enrollment can decrease. It can turn toxic. And so one of the key ways that you do this is you structure, you develop a compensation philosophy that compensation structure doesn't always strictly correlate to level, meaning what you get paid doesn't necessarily depend on what level in the organization you're at. Because one of the biggest places that organizations break down as they start to grow is when you have, we call them individual contributors, somebody that's a technician or a task specialist or somebody that's great at X, job or role. And that as the organization grows, they assume that because they're the strongest individual contributor, that they should naturally become the manager or the leader of that. Now, a lot of times, the reason they assume that or the reason they desire that isn't because they actually want more responsibility. It isn't because they think that they're actually better suited for a leadership skill set versus an individual contributor or a task specialist skill set. It's because they want the raise. They want the money that they think comes with more responsibility or leadership. But I'll use engineering as an example. This is an area where we've grown our team a lot and we've done restructuring and we've learned a lot. Just because somebody's a great software developer or a great engineer doesn't mean that they're going to naturally be a great project manager or team builder or leader of developers, right? And so, plus, if you do promote them to leader, you actually lose their developer horsepower. Now your engineering team is weaker, just lost an A player, because you put somebody in a role where they may not still be an A player, because just because they were a great developer doesn't mean they were a great manager, right? And so you have to make sure that people aren't wanting promotions just because they think it's the only way to get a raise. If you have amazing individual contributors and part of your operating system is to periodically evaluate them, why can't an individual contributor actually earn more than their manager if they're in the role that they're best suited for and they're most valuable for? And so you have to create this association in people's minds that my pay is going to be based on the value that I'm bringing in the role that I'm in. And my career trajectory is based on a desire to get into the role where I am best suited, not get into the role where I think I can make the most money. And certain types of roles have different fundamental economic values, and you know, but people have it generally know. They know that if they're, you know, part of, let's say, a concierge team or a customer support team, or more of a softer skills type of team, that they probably, no matter how good they do at taking care of the customer, they potentially may never make as much money as like the CFO that's steering the financial wheel of the whole organization, right? People understand that there's a fundamental value on different types of skills. You just got to make sure that they aren't constantly trying to move up into higher and higher roles because they think it's the only way they can get a raise. But again, that requires that you create a culture where leaders also understand that sometimes they might be leading people who get paid more than them, because there's always objective, quantifiable, non-emotional valuation. And anyway, I'm kind of beating a dead horse here, but like basically people just have to sort of buy into that it truly is what's best for the organization, not what's best for me. But you have to give them clear guidelines and clear rules of engagement about how to still maximize the opportunity for them in a way that aligns with maximizing the mission of the company. Okay, so that's it. That's my statement. I will generally sum up my philosophical bias by saying hiring beats internal development in aggregate over time. Again, not as a one-size-fits-all prescription for every scenario, but it only does so if you construct your organization intentionally from the get-go to make it possible. If you don't have the right culture, if you don't have the right compensation philosophy, if you don't have the right operating system or clarity of operating system, and you don't have the right mission that people are going to be excited to be a part of, and you don't have the right financial performance to be able to afford the best talent, then you know you're going to have difficulty executing on that position. But if those are the case, it doesn't mean, oh, well, that doesn't just work for me. I'll just focus more on developing people internally, which, you know, to be clear, I don't, hopefully this doesn't need to be said, but you should always be doing that too, right? But as a company, if you are struggling to operationalize a preference for bringing in great external talent, that doesn't mean scrap that principle and just default to, oh, I'll just promote the people I have. That's a sign that you have systemic problems in your organization. It's a sign that you don't have a mission that people are excited to be a part of. You don't have a clearly defined operating system that gives people a sense of comfort and predictability when, you know, if they're going to come work for you. You don't have healthy enough financial performance to actually be able to afford faster, better, or better, faster people. You don't have maybe a culture or an understanding that people can come into and not meet resistance because they did get hired in from the outside. And if you're dealing with those things, don't change the philosophy. Take the signal, take the cues, read the data, and actually address the problems, and you know, which can be slow and laborious and painful and also necessary if you want to build the best organization you can. This is all stuff, and like I said, no matter, it's never too early to make this decision and start to build with this in mind, because this is all stuff. It's like lawyers. It's a lot easier to bring lawyers in before you do a deal than after the deal when things have gone wrong, right? Ditto here. It is a lot easier to create this understanding, buy into this philosophy, and build the culture accordingly earlier in an organization's growth, so that every time a new role opens up and somebody doesn't get promoted, you aren't creating resentment and toxicity in the organization. All right, thanks for your time. Normally when I do my podcast and YouTube videos, they're interviews, so I have like a whole script, but this is just me this time. So we don't run ads on the show, on the podcast. This is truly just a value gift to the world. I like to share what I'm learning as I go. So positive reviews are really, really helpful. Likes on the video are really helpful. And especially subscribe to the channel if you want more content like this. Thank you so much for your time. Catch you on the next one.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening. And especially if you like or share or leave a review, thank you for helping us spread the word. And thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.